Welcome to the Election 2007 podcast interviews. In this podcast series, candidates in the May 2007 polls tell you what they think about the various issues and problems facing the country. No sound bites, just complete answers to pressing questions so you can make an informed choice in May.
Welcome to the Election 2007 podcast. Our guest for today is Senator Francis Pangilinan, who is running under the Liberal Party and has been adopted by the United Opposition slate. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, JV, and to our listeners, thank you for tuning in.
Okay. Our first question will be from Inquirer.net's breaking news editor, Lynette Luna.
Hi, Lynette.
Hi. How would you like us to address you, Senator Kiko?
Kiko's fine.
Yeah.
Kiko is fine. It's more egalitarian. Senator makes me look sound old.
Okay, then with our first question then. You are running for the Senate again.
That is correct.
As a re-electionist. Why is this so?
Well, after 6 years in the Senate and having experienced Senate work and looking at the problems that continue to confront our nation, we have begun what I think are reform measures. We have put in place reform measures in several areas, and we feel that in order to sustain and move towards ensuring that the reform processes that we've put in place, particularly in the area of justice and human rights, the area of education, livelihood, and job generation and employment. In order to sustain this, we felt the need to continue and seek a second term. So it's really realizing that reforms don't happen overnight. You know, it takes quite some time. Mm-hmm. It's a process. I think a second term would be necessary in order to ensure that what we have begun, kanga eh hindi magiging ningas kugon, mauuwi sa wala, or matitigil dahil nga kulang pa sa panahon at oras. You know, it's a gestation. Reform takes time. Eh. So that's primarily the reason why I'm seeking re-election, to be able to ensure that the reform process that we have started out in certain selected sectors will be sustained and will continue to the point that it becomes irreversible.
Aside from the judicial reforms that you mentioned, what other aspects would you like to accomplish in this term in the Senate if you get elected?
Yes, the issue of education and the problems confronting the education system, primarily focusing on primary and secondary education, continues to plague us, continues to be a very serious problem, and we need to address this squarely, and we need to follow through on this. Mm-hmm. We have identified put in place several reform efforts to fill in, for example, the lack of school buildings, the lack of textbooks and desks, the lack of teachers. The educational system in the country continues to be plagued by all these problems, and we need to be able to follow through on what we have begun in terms of ensuring that these shortages are addressed, and even the quality of teaching is also addressed. So this is another area wherein we feel we have to follow through on, precisely because this has a direct bearing not only on the country's future in terms of being able to produce an educated workforce, able to compete in the region and the rest of the world.
You've been courted by both the administration and the opposition tickets for you to run under their respective banners, and yet you've opted to run as an independent.
Yes.
Why is this so?
Well, I felt that if you look at the terrain, the political terrain, I just felt that perhaps it would be good to provide our people alternatives to the choices that are being presented by the different political groups and entities. I think it's a function of leadership to provide the people, the public, with choices in terms of who to choose or sino ang pagpipilian nila para maging mga leader nila. I felt that given the confusion, because there is so much confusion, if you are to look at how the political developments have unfolded in the last maybe month and a half, yung dating administration nasa opposition, yung dating opposition nasa administration, nalilito ang tao, confusing, magulo, and so I felt maybe we should provide alternatives to the choices being presented. And that's why I felt that this path was a path to provide our people with other choices apart from those already being presented.
But you ran under the administration ticket the first time.
Yes, but the Liberal Party in July 8 asked her to step down.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that to be consistent with a decision that I had made 2 years ago, I could not see how I could go back to the administration. A decision was made that called for her resignation, and I felt it was I couldn't find myself to go back to the administration after calling for the resignation of the president. The inconsistency is something that I am not able to explain to myself and my children. So I said, we can't do that. We can't go that way simply because we're concerned about being re-elected. There is more to political leadership than just being re-elected. Given the political difficulties that we face as a nation today, we should be able to think outside the box and offer something else to the voter.
The opposition considers you one of its own, but you have yet to join any of their political sorties. And do you also espouse the advocacies that they are presenting?
First, I'm thankful for the show of support and the trust. When you're campaigning, every vote counts. And therefore, this adoption is something that we are thankful for. It adds to our ability to reach out to more people in that sense. But if you look at my track record in the Senate in the last 2 years, yes, I have worked with the opposition on selected issues. But at the same time, I have also endorsed and supported administration measures which I felt would redound to the benefit of our people. So in other words, I have always been comfortable in the last 2 years as an independent conscience voice, not limited to or limited by political affiliations in that sense, but more, you know, having the freedom to be able to discern, to be able to assess and evaluate and then decide on the basis of the issues we are confronted with, which way to go. I think part of the reason why we do have problems in our political processes is because there is a tendency to be more partisan. And the partisanship has its merits, but sometimes we need to set aside partisan political differences and look at the issue squarely and objectively and then decide on the basis of what is best for the country.
Is this how you want to define your term if elected in the Senate, that you will be an independent-minded senator?
I think we need more of that. I think if we are to push for reforms in our political processes, we need to think outside the box. We need to make difficult decisions. I think our politics has stagnated to its lowest level in this sense because too few are willing to take risks, calculated risks, of course, and to try and move the quality of our political discourse and debate to a higher level. Sabi nga nila, it would have been easy for me to have just accepted the administration's offer. And, you know, with the machinery, I'm doing number two in the surveys, I would have been a sure winner. No? But that's precisely, in a sense, parang ang pakiramdam ko, kaya hindi rin nagkakaroon ng pagbabago kasi lagi na lang kung ano yung madali. The path of least resistance, if you can call it that. No? And so, of course, I don't claim to be correct here. I don't know. It's a calculated risk. Hindi naman ako nagmamalinis dito kasi siguro kung number 10 ako sa survey, baka iba yung naging decision ko. No? But it so happens that I'm ranking a little higher and so I felt that we can probably risk a bolder stance given the fact that there is that level of, in governance you call it political capital. I have more political capital, quote-unquote, and therefore I'm willing to spend it for what I believe to be what is better or best or at least better for our country and our politics.
Thank you, Kiko, and thank you for gracing the Inquirer.net podcast.
Ay, salamat, salamat.
Salamat.
Thank you, thank you.
Hi, sir. I'm Myla Asher of Inquirer.net.
And yes, Myla.
Yes, and I'm covering the opposition ticket. And I guess they miss you there. Don't you miss them, the opposition?
I'd like to think that more than the issue of whether we will campaign together or separately or whether I will appear in the proclamation rally or not. First, we've settled this with UNO. No? I've sat down with them and I've explained to them some of my limitations and concerns and they've understood this. So I think that's really a case closed at this time. And what is really more important than how the campaign will go or whether we will join or not, whether we will be there or not, I think are what kind of Senate do we want to have? What does the country need in terms of its current political and economic situation? Ano ba ang nararapat na maging komposisyon ng Senado? No? Sino ba ang deserving? At bakit sila deserving? At ano ba ang pangangailangan ngayon ng ating bansa na kung saan, halimbawa, we can see there is a growing trend of authoritarianism, if you can call it that, no? Of presidential powers being exercised in excess. No? And we've seen this in the last 2 years. The Supreme Court, di ba, thumbing down the exercise of executive power as being contrary to the law and the Constitution. No? So, some people have said, may mga nagsasabi na nga, na sa ngayon, dalawa na lamang ang talagang independent, no, na institusyon ng pamahalaan, no, yung Supreme Court at yung Senado, no. Sabi nila, nakompromiso na ang militar, nakompromiso na ang House of Representatives, ang local governments, and other institutions, no. So, it's very important at this time na you have a Senate that will maintain its independence, will serve as a check, and a balance on the excesses of Malacañang. We must have a counter-center, if you can call it that, to Malacañang's exercise of its powers. Otherwise, sabi nga nila, and precisely why the systems of check and balance has been put in our constitutional democracy, kasi nga, you know, the concentration of power in one office, and history has shown this in other countries, that so much concentration will lead to abuse, will lead to excess, no? And we don't want that to happen in the country, no? We want to have a healthy, and I say healthy, no, not a destructive, a healthy check on the executive department.
Sir, can we discuss the limitations with regard to your joining the opposition rallies?
Well, that's why I'm saying I think it is more important to discuss our platform, why we must have an independent Senate, rather than why will I not join or join, why will I... No, parang sa akin, the Senate as an institution is beyond that. Eh. And in fact, I'd like to rely on my track record to show that no one can doubt my independence, no one can doubt at this point, no, my position on issues in terms of the excesses of Malacañang. So I go by my track record, and I think I need not explain my loyalties at this point. My loyalty is to the country. My loyalty is to what I believe to be the strengthening and preservation of our constitutional democracy.
Sir, what was the hardest part in coming up with that decision to run as independent?
Well, it was a leap of faith. Siyempre, the traditional political operators will tell you, you know, you need to have the machinery. Your votes will be... How will you ensure that your votes will be counted? How will you run an independent campaign, you know, covering 40 plus million voters? So you had to check everything. It's not the first time, by the way, that an independent candidate has run and won. No? In the last 6 years or 8 years, I think, you have Miriam, Senator Defensor Santiago, in 1995, who ran as an independent. Gringo Hunasan, also in 1995, ran as an independent. And Noli De Castro, in 2001, ran as an independent. So it's not the first time. No? And therefore, winning as an independent has happened in the past, and it can be done again. That is probably one of the reasons why I took the risk. I said it's not as if it's politically disastrous. No? And I'm ranking quite high, and of course, I'm thankful for that. And I'd like to think isa sa dahilan eh, dahil nagtitiwala ang taong bayan doon sa nagawa na rin natin. Ano? Ayun, so ang pinakamahirap sa lahat talaga is hindi madali yung tumakbo ng independiente. No? And so, did I want that? Did I want the burden, the difficulty, the hardship? But more than the decision to run independent is the decision to run at all. No? Kasi that was also another option. No? So I was looking at ang gulo-gulo ng mga pangyayari, mahirap itong papasukan natin. Parang napepwersa tayong humanay sa isa o sa isa kung hindi, kasi hindi naman daw ginagawa o bihirang ginagawa yung maging alternative o independent. So sabi ko, eh baka wag na rin tumakbo. No? Was another option. But I think the most difficult thing really is, apart from that, where will we position ourselves is, you know, my children are 6 years old and 2.5. You know, they're growing up very fast. I happen to be a very hands-on father. In fact, I wanted to bring Frank Miel here kanina, and I was playing with Frankie. My routine is, I wake up in the morning at around before 7. I bring my papers and my coffee in the playroom or in Miel's room. I read it there while I spend time with them, alternating between reading the papers and spending time with. So the most difficult thing really for me is the fact that I will be separated from my family, my children, for 90 days and not be with them. So, and then go through all this. You won't wish the experience of campaigning as a candidate in a national campaign. You won't wish it on your worst enemy. It's really a very punishing 90 days. And then, mahihiwalay ka pa sa pamilya mo. Parang, napakasakit, Kuya Eddie.
Sir, but they say that you are confident of running as independent because you have a megastar wife.
Well, of course that helps. But siguro, if I did not accomplish much in the last 6 years, no, siguro ang ranking ko baka number 15, number 10, diba? So, of course it helps. But I'd like to think also in the past 6 years, we have also done naman our share in preserving our constitutional democracy and acting as a effective check and balance on the excesses of the administration. So, siguro naman meron ding konting contribution yun sa ating pagiging viable ng ating kandidatura.
So, Sir, how do you feel that until now some of your critics are calling you Mr. Noted?
Mr. Noted? Well, kasama yan. You know, we had to do our work there, and we've been able to explain this quite a number of times in the past. What we decided there and what we did there, we did with only one thing in mind, you know, the Constitution and the rule of law. One must understand that as that was happening, wala pa yung Hello Garci, wala pa lahat yan. Ano. Mahirap ikabit yung Hello Garci dun sa sitwasyon na kung nasaan ako nun dahil hindi naman ako yung tumawag kay Garci. No? At hindi ko naman kinausap si Presidente ever during the 30 days of the canvassing. And I really had nothing, no knowledge whatsoever of what was happening in the different parts of the country. All I knew was, and all I did was, canvass the votes. And the Constitution is clear, no? Yung pandaraya, hindi sa canvassing board yan. Ito hindi rin naintindihan ng ilan nating mga kababayan. Mas mabuti na rin ipaliwanag. The Constitution says the fraud in the elections must be settled and resolved in the Presidential Electoral Tribunal. The Constitution says the canvassing board is a ministerial board. It does ministerial functions. All you do there is to canvass the votes. So what the opposition then wanted to do was to transform the canvassing board and make it the electoral tribunal. And therefore, telling us to do an unconstitutional act. So there may have been fraud, yes. And there may have been a wrong, yes. But we do not correct a wrong with another wrong by transforming the canvassing board into the Presidential Electoral Tribunal. So we had to do what we had to do to ensure that the canvassing was smooth and consistent with the law and the Constitution. And I'd like to think also, after the canvassing, when the next set of surveys for the performance of the senators was undertaken, I happened to jump several notches higher. No? In fact, that was my highest jump, mga 10% of the population na nadagdagan yung aking approval. No? So I think, by and large, nakita siguro ng publiko na 30 days yun, we gave the opposition all the leeway, you know, to express all their concerns and issues, but it had to be consistent with the rule of law and the Constitution.
As a member of the Liberal Party, sir, do you regret at all helping the president swept into power in 2001?
You know, I have very few regrets, no? We did what we had to do then out of a sense of, you know, conviction and belief. And of course, eventually things change. Things develop differently. But that doesn't in any way change my view that at that point, at that time, I decided on the basis of what I felt was best for the country. Now, if things unfolded differently, then we will have to adjust accordingly and make decisions as we go along, as we did. When we came to that point wherein we felt that governance had been compromised and the ability to govern effectively likewise, then we made a decision. We could have played it safe also and just looked the other way and pretend that the problem will go away, but we didn't do that. We had to make a stand also. So what I did then, prior to all these political controversies, what I did after, no, and what I did, what I'm doing today, I only have one parameter, no, and that is it consistent with my conscience, what I believe to be best, my principles? If it's contrary to what I believe in and my principles, you can be assured that it is something that I will not stand for, or it is something that I will oppose or will not take sitting down.
Thank you very much.
Thank
sir.
You.
Sir, good morning, sir. Alex Villafania from Inquirer.net.
Yes, Alex.
For my first question, what do you think, sir, are the three most pressing problems in the Philippines right now, and if and when you are voted as senator, what will you do to solve these?
I think the single most important issue in the country would be, how do we address the creation of wealth? And together with that, of course, is to ensure that you have an atmosphere that is conducive to wealth creation. So wealth creation would be, how do we address the issue of poverty? How do we bring our economy to a level that will be par with the rest of the region or the world? And then creating the atmosphere conducive to that, of course, will address the issue of the rule of law, no, and the justice system. Now, I have my own, you know, after 6 years of going through the budget debates in the Senate, I have my own ideas. How do you address the issue of creating an economy that will be vibrant and robust? I think we have to focus on three: agricultural modernization, infrastructure, we must invest in infrastructure and education. The world is getting smaller. Our workforce must be given the skill, the ability, the capability to compete with the economies of other nations. And to be able to do that, they must have capacity and the skill and the capability, which only education, cutting-edge education, can provide. I say agricultural modernization because half the country's population rely on the agricultural sector. And I say agriculture because we are actually sitting, agriculture and fisheries, no? Because I'd like to think we're actually sitting on a gold mine. And we may only reach the level of economic growth and output to hit 7 and above in terms of GDP growth if we address modernization of our agricultural sector. Being able to make production at levels that are optimum, you know, wastage is avoided. We're able to sell at better prices, up the incomes of our farmers and those relying on agriculture. For example, we happen to be the most diverse aquamarine ecosystem in the world. The New England lobster 10 years ago was a $2 billion industry. Just one product. We can count probably, and it doesn't taste good. The Philippine lobster, you know, is sweet. It's very juicy because sabi nila yung cold water, ano daw, hindi masyadong malasa, but yung warm water, tropical, ano, masarap. And it can actually be a $1 billion industry. And we happen to be geographically in the center of East Asia. Every major city in Asia is only 4 hours away by plane. So you can imagine the strategic location we're in. We're sitting on a gold mine. We can actually be the seafood basket of Asia. So these are raw materials that are all there. And agricultural modernization is key. Second, as I said, is infrastructure. What Thailand did in the late 70s and early 80s is they spent for infrastructure. And they opened up their agricultural products to the markets quickly. So that upped the amounts of the incomes. No? But there was another revenue stream. One revenue stream is better agricultural productivity. The other revenue stream is these places became accessible to tourists. And so the second revenue stream is tourism. So one expenditure, infrastructure, roads, bridges, seaports, airports, but two revenue streams, which is greater agricultural productivity and incomes for our people and tourism. We are only doing 2.6 million tourists last year. Malaysia is doing 15 million tourists. Thailand is doing 12 million. In Thailand, you ask each tourist, and the average return of each tourist is at least twice. He comes back a second time to Thailand precisely because it is a tourism-friendly community. And they're earning billions of dollars because of these industries. In the next 5 years, it has been projected that China will have 150 million new tourists in the next 5 years. And we are just an hour and a half away from China. So you can imagine the potential of being able to ride that wave. And I was talking to somebody, an expat. He works here now. He used to work in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. He heads one of the multinational companies. And he said, I was in Malaysia for 4 years. This is my third year here in Manila. Malaysia is doing so much with so little. And you are doing so little with so much. And you know, the potential is so great because we're only doing 2.6. We doubled that. That's 100% increase in arrivals. It's only 5 million. It's a third of Malaysia. So you can imagine the potential. No? So that is the other area, infrastructure and opening up tourism revenues. No? And the third, of course, which is, I think, key to all that in terms of sustainability and ensuring that we remain truly competitive, is educating the workforce. We must provide more for education. They've said that we have collected over 140 billion from IVAT. And we must, in the coming years, allocate the necessary... Siyempre, ang dami mong kinakailangan pagbigyan, ano? Kumbaga sa, ano, there's so many competing interests, no? In terms of where the money should go. But we should look at priorities. Eventually, once we've been able to get over the hump, then we can now focus on the resource allocation to other priority areas. But I think immediately, these are the three major areas that we must address. And then, of course, that's for economic growth and development under the wealth creation concept. And of course, the rule of law. No amount of investments in infrastructure and agriculture will be sustainable if, obviously, the rule of law is more myth than reality. And we have begun that reform process there. The rule of law means we must punish more, we must convict more, and we must convict swiftly. People are saying, why is there still corruption? Why is there illegal logging? Why are journalists being shot in broad daylight? I think a major bottleneck in terms of addressing respect or confronting respect for the rule of law. A major bottleneck is the delay in the resolution of cases. How can you have respect and fear of the law if you can see that nobody's getting punished anyway? So you create that parang nagkakaroon ngayon ng kawalan ng respeto sa ating mga batas dahil naglalakas loob itong mga salarin at itong mga criminal elements na dahil wala naman napaparusahan eh. And then you come up with the PNP saying, you know, out of the 26 killed journalists, 21 case closed. Diba? Yung pala, ang ibig sabihin ng case closed, eh nakapag-file na ng kaso. No? So kahit na sinong Torpilano yun, diba? Yung fall guy, basta nasampahan na ng reklamo, kahit na torturin mo, etc. Diba? Basta nasampahan. Case closed na as far as the PNP is concerned. This doesn't solve the problem. In fact, this exacerbates the problem. So that is one major area. And we have been able to address in a continuing process of reform the problem of the delay in the resolution of cases. That's precisely why we fought tooth and nail in the 12th Congress to make sure that we are able to address the issue of pay for judges. Because before that, nobody wanted to become a judge. Or very few. Or at least, kokonti lang. And some of them pa, mas sususpecha ka, bakit? Kasi, imagine, before we passed the law, the basic pay of a judge in the first level court was 22,000 pesos. The basic pay for a second level court judge was 25,000 pesos. Why will I, a lawyer of 10 years, go into government service, become a judge, and earn a basic pay of 25,000? I'll just practice my law privately. I'll earn 25,000 pesos in half a case. In one case, and that's it. It was ridiculous. So immediately, we in the 12th Congress, 6 years ago, we said we have to double the pay. We have to address the issue of pay. And we did. And today, first-level court judges will be receiving at least a little under 80,000 a month. So, sabi ko nga, if you're 5 years in the practice of law, relatively a new lawyer, you can now be an MTC judge. You can apply, and then that will now become part forever of your curriculum vitae, you know, that you were a judge once. And you look at the nice spots. You know? MTC Ibahay is only 20 minutes away from Boracay. You know? So if you're earning under 80,000 a month, and you're single, and you're a judge, you know, and Boracay is only 20 minutes away, it's a, you know, so it's challenging, you know, lawyers to take on a career in government service. And mind you, we now, after 4 years, I'm happy to report, you know, that we have been able to reduce the vacancy in the entire judiciary from a high of 30% nationally, 44% in the first level courts, it's now down to a little over 20%, and still going down. Because last year alone, we were able to process 160 vacancies, all pending in Malacañang, or quite a number still pending in Malacañang, to fill up the vacancy rate. And the reason why we have all these applications is precisely because they have seen that the pay now is competitive, at least in the provinces. And you can imagine Las Piñas, one court, RTC court in Las Piñas, there are 62, 63 applicants. So you're now able to choose from the best and the brightest. Diba? And that is part of the reform process in terms of ensuring that the rule of law prevails. And what is the net effect of this? In the next 3 to 5 years, you fill up the vacancies, you speed up the case backlog, you are able to punish swiftly, and there will be respect for the rule of law. And this has happened in many countries. In Hong Kong, pinaka-corrupt dati yung Hong Kong police, they put in place the ICAP, the Anti-Corruption Commission, and pulled the bull by its horns, and they were able to transform things. So things can happen and will be happening. And I'm excited that we have that opportunity to ensure that these reforms that we are putting in place will reach a level that it will become irreversible. It's not so much seeing the reform happen overnight, but more the strategy really is to ensure that the reform process becomes irreversible. That way, tuloy-tuloy.
Sir, I'd like to go back to the issue on education. Meron po ba kayong part po doon sa platform nyo regarding improving the current situation in education?
You know, it's good you asked me that. No? I have been one of those supporters of Gawad Kalinga since day one, because I was chairman of the Senate Committee on Housing in 2001. And in 2002, under less than a year after I was elected, I sat down with Tony Meloto. He asked for an appointment. Wala pang Gawad Kalinga noon, it was still a concept. And having seen the problems in the housing sector and realizing then that government alone will not be able to solve the housing problem. It has to be community-based. There must be local government, strong local government participation and private sector participation. And when the Gawad Kalinga concept was presented to me, I said, it's worth experimenting on as a formula to address socialized housing as a serious problem in our country. And 5 years later, we've been able to allocate 40 million from the PDAF. It's not ours, by the way. It's yours, people's money. It's just allocated to a senator, but it's really taxpayers' money. But we allocated 40 million every year, no, for the past 5 years. So totaling 40 million. And we'd like to think that we helped jumpstart the Gawad Kalinga success. But the formula there really is partnership of the private sector and committed and dedicated public sector representatives. You know, last year, Gawad Kalinga, after being able to succeed in presenting these success stories, trooped to Congress and asked in a budget hearing of the Committee on Housing as well as Committee on Appropriations, they asked for resources from the congressmen. Initially, the congressmen said, no, we can't do that. You can't put public funds into private housing. You can't do that. That's against the law. And then the Gawad Kalinga said, but we've been doing it with Senator Kiko's office in the past 5 years and there's no problem. COA has agreed. It's okay. So when they looked at the formula, what happened in housing is that 60 congressmen agreed to allocate 5 million each for Gawad Kalinga in their districts, thereby raising a total of an additional 300 million pesos for housing for Gawad Kalinga in 60 districts throughout the country in tie-up with local government. So that's an additional 300 million of government resources now allocated for housing. And that's now a template for housing. The reason why I'm saying this is because now we go to education. Mm-hmm. We should also find a template for education wherein you have a strong partnership of the private sector and government in the local levels. Research has shown and studies have shown that the best performing schools in the country, the best performing students in the country, come from schools wherein you have the active participation of the parents, the local governments, in supporting the school. Pag active yung parents teachers association, pag active yung community, pag active yung local government, the quality of your students, talagang the quality of the education increases 100-fold and you produce better students. So that is scientific. So what do we do now? The challenge now is to be able to use the template of Gawad Kalinga, but this time do it in primary education. Why primary education? Because that's where it all begins. The biggest dropout rates are from first grade to fourth grade. If you don't catch them in that period, they're lost forever. No? So you have to catch them there. And so that's where you begin the support for education. It's really a challenge. You know, in the end, my slogan in 2001 when I was campaigning was Kumilos Kasama Si Kiko. Which is to say, in so many words, that if we want change in this country, we will all have to do our share. That we have to be engaged as citizens. And we have to maybe select leaders in the local level as well as in the national level who are likewise committed to the same vision. I'd like to think that the Gawad Kalinga template should be applicable and effective in ensuring that we do a similar approach in education. And I'm sure you will have a lot of resources. Kasi ano yan eh, success breeds more success, di ba? So if they see that there are success stories in the education sector, and we need, now we direly need more success stories in the education sector precisely because of the crisis it's now faced with. Only then, I think, can we really turn things around in terms of reforming our system of education.
Sir, regarding also about the education system.
And mind you, there are organizations now involved in this, no? The Foundation for People Power of Egi Apostol is involved in. I sat down with DepEd Secretary Jesly Lapus and then I gave him a possible additional reform measure that can be undertaken so that schools are adopted. You know, you have the National Service Training Program. It's a requirement for college students. They have to do 1 year civic action work. I told Jesly, Secretary, why don't you do a tie-up with the CHED so that these campus organizations will adopt schools in their areas for 1 year and raise the necessary resources that will help augment the needs of these schools. I was saying this because we actually have an organization, TAYO, Inquirer is a partner there, 10 Accomplished Youth Organization. Every year for 4 years, we've done this. No? And one of the winners 2 years ago was the Western Visayas State University Political Science Organization. What they did, it's in Iloilo, they adopted an Upland Elementary School, an Upland Barangay, in Iloilo. You have to walk 2 hours to get to that school. But for 1 year, the Western Visayas State University Poli-Sci Organization did a series of fundraising activities for the school. They would have different fundraising activities and they ended up being able to secure donations for computers, textbooks, other instructional materials. And they were even able to buy slippers for the school children kasi walang mga chinelas yung mga bata pag pumapasok. So I was telling Jesly, this can be adapted. This is now a template. And you're hitting two birds with one stone. It's a requirement for the college students to graduate and you're actually addressing the acute problems confronting the primary education system in our country. And he liked it. No? Mm-hmm. he liked the idea, and I think he will. He said, you know, after the election, let's sit down again and work on it. So we're looking for solutions. We're all tired of all these empty promises and this parang motherhood statements of how do we solve the problem. Not only how, not we, there is a problem. We're now looking for how do we concretely respond. And these are templates that we've already been able to see. And actually, it's actually happening. And having been a student activist and a student leader myself, you know, there's so much energy out there with our young people. Another thing that I'm thinking of, you know, I'm thinking of a lot of things, sorry, is teacher training. And this is something that I hope to be able to amend sa ating PRC law. Basta student leader ka, maganda ang grades mo, academic, cum laude, student leader ka. In other words, you're both successful in extracurricular and curricular activities na marami. You should be eligible immediately to teach in public schools, even just for a year. Mm-hmm. Provided you go through maybe a seminar series of 2 weeks to be able to get basic teaching school. This is patterned after what has happened in the US, in Teach for America. Active recruitment of young, new grads who are academically proficient, in fact, excellent, and then extracurricular activities, they have leadership skills, to apply for and commit to public education, public sector, or public education teaching for just a year. This is another area wherein you can really help address acute crisis in the education system.
Sir, there's also another issue regarding education right now. Kasi a lot of graduates from even from the top schools are working as call center agents. So they basically don't use what they learn in school to work as...
Well, that's a function of Mark. You know, precisely the economy has yet to pick up. And therefore, you're producing graduates whose jobs are not here. Diba? Precisely because you're unable to create the necessary economic activity to provide for the jobs that are supposed to be for their, you know, suited for their qualifications. No? Ngayon, call center, dati nga, college graduate, kailangan nasa Jollibee. Diba yung requirement ng McDo, kailangan college graduate, diba? So that is really now a function of how to up the economic situation in the country. But at the same time, of course, it's also addressing the issue of the system of education in our country. You know, what kind of graduates are we producing? Suddenly, may lahat nagde-nursing, di ba? Lahat nag-aaral para maging... Merong isa eh. Before nursing, there was another. PT ba? Oh, caregivers. Basta may gano'n, parang masyadong reactive dun sa ano yung sinasabi ng merkado. Tapos, you build in, tapos biglang bagsak. Iba naman. No? So, kailangan din ayusin yung ating sistema ng edukasyon. What exactly do we need? And I think we have to work, we have to strengthen also yung vocational, yung voc-tech na kung tawagin. No? Because, but again, it's again a function of being able to ensure that you have greater economic activity so that the dignity of labor is upheld. Until such time that gumagana ng mas malakas ang ekonomiya mo, you can only pay your people so much. So, that really is a challenge. And the answer to that was what I said earlier, no? Agricultural modernization, put in place infrastructure, and again, yung addressing initially primary education.
Sir, is information and communications technology a part of your platform?
In the sense that it is part of building capacity in education. I think the Ayala Foundation, I'm not sure if Inquirer is involved with that, yung GILAS, you know, is providing, you know, computers, matching. Again, that's another template, no? Private sector participation, partnering with government, local governments to address information communication technology needs of the educational system. We also have tie-ups with the ABS-CBN Foundation and the local government units wherein we provide yung educational TV. Sa halagang 50,000, you have a TV, you have the instructional materials, there is... studies have also shown that the ability, the comprehension skills and the reading skills and the vocabulary of a student who utilizes these instructional materials can reach as high as 30% more because of the help of the technology, the tool, the availability of such a tool. So we have a tie-up with the local governments. This is, I think, 200 schools nationwide been able to benefit from that tie-up. And it's working quite well. No? And the thing about that, of course, this is all PDAF. No? But the thing is, if you have a tie-up of the PDAF with the private sector, it's more transparent. No? Because it's more transparent, it's more accountable. Gawad Kalinga, 40 million. Di ba? Mga couples for Christ yan. Hindi ka naman pwedeng pumunta sa couple. Oh, I will allocate 40 million of the PDAF, ha? Pero... may porsyento tayo dyan. So, that, you do away with that, obviously. No? And that's also why I like it that way. No? Because you maximize the use of government resources because of the presence of private sector organizations that have integrity and have a track record.
Alright, I guess that's it, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Veronica Uy from Inquire.net.
Of course. Good morning, Veron.
It's not very much known that Sharon Cuneta is political savvy. What was her reaction to your running as an independent?
She was proud of me and scared. Medyo may agam-agam, syempre, pero mas nangibabaw yung palagay ko nga na. In fact, that's her exact words. No? I'm so proud of you. So yun. And for me, and I told her, sabi ko, that's all that matters to me, really. Because the experience with the families of those who campaign, you know, it's really talagang malaking sakripisyo, malaking hirap. Yun nga, you won't wish it nga on your worst enemy. You know? The moment she said that, then I said, then we're fine. We'll be fine, wherever we are. Because that is how she feels about what I did. Then
she did not advise you to go either way, opposition or administration?
She gave her inputs. She gave her views. She shared to me her own concerns. But I think she was happiest with my going independent also.
Are there any advice that she gave you about campaigning?
Ah, marami.
Ano yung mga pinaka-useful?
Wag daw ako masungit. Wag daw nakakunutan noo. I should learn to relax, you know, and make light of things. Kasi ako, medyo minsan, nagiging masyado akong serious. No? Sabi niya, alam mo, when we're together, sabi niya, ikaw nga, you're very funny, you know. Mapapalabiro ka, nakakatawa ka. Pero parang dapat malaman din ng tao na meron kang ganung side. And that brings you closer to the people. It's not as if you're faking it, sabi niya, because it's real. It's just that sometimes, sabi niya, siguro you're conscious na dapat seryoso ka. Sometimes, sabi niya, you just let, you know, loosen up and let the public also deserve. They also would want to know more facets of your life, sabi niya. So, I'm sure, coming from someone who's been in the business over nearly 30 years, diba, in terms of how to relate with or connect sa publiko, siyempre, kumbaga sa ano, that is tips from the master. No, diba? Kumbaga in that area, siya si Yoda at ako si Luke Skywalker.
Okay. Kaya, I'm serious on yung next question.
Okay.
The UN rapporteur on extrajudicial killings earlier this morning said he's convinced that the military was responsible for most part of the, for many of the killings. What is your own personal take on this, and how would your sitting as senator in the next term, you know, try to solve this institutionally, in reform-wise?
I think it doesn't come as a surprise. It's something that we have known all along. I mean, we have suspected all along. And it doesn't help any that in one of the State of the Nation addresses, the one suspected of precisely having a hand at these extrajudicial killings, you know, was acknowledged and praised. Obviously, clearly, this administration is relying more and more on the armed forces as its legitimacy is questioned. Sabi nga nila, merong kasabihan, di ba? You ride the tiger, you end up inside. I'd like to think up to a certain extent that's what is happening. And to veer away from the issue of precisely the illegitimacy question, the communist bogey, di ba? Which is a talagang old trick na ang problema ng bansa eh yung NPA, kaya dapat lipulin lahat yan. It consolidates the armed forces towards a goal that is has already been proven to be ineffective. All-out war on the insurgents has not worked. In fact, if we go by recent experience, the peace initiatives of during the Ramos presidency were in fact the way to go because it ushered in a period of relative peace and progress. That was how Davao was turned around, the aggressiveness within which to sit down and negotiate rather than resort to the force of arms. All that has led to precisely, you know, these increases in extrajudicial killings. Now, what do we intend to do? Malaking bagay yung magiging findings ng UN, you know, because it now internationalizes in that sense the issue. And when that happens, then we will be compelled as a nation and the administration included, you know, to take measures that will address it. Whereas before, it was being swept under the rug, big finger pointing, you know, trying to embellish it and say that This is probably a communist conspiracy to assassinate, you know, purge, etc. You know, mas lumiliwanag, you know, with the UN pronouncements, and hopefully that report will lead to forcing the hand of government to respond. In the areas of legislation, we should be able to follow through on measures such as principal author of the anti-torture measure. That has to be put in place. We were hoping to be able to put that as part of the anti-terrorism bill, no? But then there are constitutional limitations. You know, you can't have two subject matters under one law. So it has to be a separate bill altogether. The final approval of the BICAM report for the human rights compensation measure is also, I think, a welcome development, because we will now put in place, at least in terms of, you know, our painful experience under the Marcos dictatorship, it will now be, there is now a state response to that, which again can be used as a template for current violations of human rights. It will not address directly, diba, compensation for those whose rights have been violated by the current administration, but at least it now shows that such acts, you can be made to account for such acts. Now we need to see how we can address this in terms of the current situation.
I forgot how you voted on the anti-terror bill. What was your position then and now?
Well,
on that?
My position initially was that at its raw form, I would have voted against it. But because of the safeguards put in place by Senators Drilon and Senator Pimentel, I felt that we have a law that we can work around and work with. There is enough safeguards put in place. The threat of terrorism is real, but it should not be used, the measure should not be used to impinge on and violate and trample upon the rights of ordinary citizens or those who have valid and legitimate grievances against the state. And so the challenge now is to ensure that you have, you know, the Senate monitoring how the law is to be implemented and ensuring that oversight functions are exercised.
What about the visiting forces agreement? Do you think that it should be revisited?
In the light of the Smith case, I think yes. There should be, at least on the part of the Senate, the next Senate, there should be public hearings conducted on how we may fill in the gaps and the loopholes in the treaty.
What specific gaps in the treaty would you like?
Well, as basic as custody. You know, that issue remains unresolved. And of course, the courts will decide that. But we don't want to have to make this a matter of case to case. No, it has to be clear cut. In fact, I supported the call that in the meantime, we should probably hold all these military exercises and just allow for exercise of soft power, no? Which is, you know, the school buildings, the roads. Hindi naman either or yan eh. Diba? Hindi naman kinakailangang, you can do away first with the military exercises but address the humanitarian requirements and needs that wherein the people benefit. But that's a matter of negotiation.
What about charter change? What's your position there? Do you think that there should be discussions on how to change the constitution after the elections and how, in what form?
You can't stop them from raising it, and I expect them, in fact, to do so. But I think after our experience with the effort at changing the charter in the last 6 months, the proponents of charter change have given charter change a very bad name. We will be hard-pressed to regain the people's trust in terms of the real motivations behind charter change. It's very difficult to, you know, historically, if you look at the constitutional writing history of our country, you have only been able to revise the constitution twice and under abnormal circumstances. Thrice, actually. Abnormal because the 1935 constitution was under American colonial rule. So, second was 73 constitution. Revised it because it was martial law. Diba? That's how you rammed it down the throats. Third was after the 86 revolution. So rewriting an entire constitution has only been made possible under circumstances wherein you do have the normal political situations. Trying to revise the constitution, given all the different conflicting interests in under a constitutional democracy, I think is difficult. The success of amending the constitution, on the other hand, historically, as you will see, has only happened if it were mere amendments and not major revisions. So we were able to amend the constitution to shift from a unicameral to a bicameral Congress because that was one amendment, ginawa lang unique bicameral, in 1939, I think. I'm not sure, but under the American colonial rule pa yon. So amendments kaya, pero yung revision mahirap.
But you don't see a need to amend the constitution now? The economic provisions, that some people are saying are needed.
There are, but I don't think it's bread and butter. You know, people will come here, the economy will prosper, will, you know, economic provisions. Our Asian neighbors, our ASEAN neighbors, they don't allow foreign ownership of property, but they're prospering, diba? I mean, it's a sorry excuse for having one party perpetuate itself in power. You need to change the charter. So for me, we weren't born yesterday. Right? You shift to a parliamentary form of government, you think smuggling will disappear? You think crime will go down because more people are punished? Cases will be resolved faster because of parliamentary form of government? Right? And the abuse of the pork barrel will be gone because of a parliamentary form of government? I think the answers to all those questions is not necessarily. Right? So it's really not the form of government. Sabi nga nila, it's not the system, it's how you run the system. That's the issue. Kumbaga, you may have a Volkswagen or a BMW, but if the Volkswagen and the BMW both have drivers who don't know how to drive, diba, then you're going to wreck both cars. Diba? So you change the system, but the drivers are still unable to drive effectively, that will still be run to the ground. So it's a sorry excuse for certain groups or interests, vested interests that seem to see that as an opportunity to strengthen their hold on power.
From the Philippine Constitution, I'd like to go to the UP Charter and the issue of tuition increases.
Yes.
What's your position here?
I think those who can pay should pay, and those who cannot should be provided the support. That's my take there. So I'd like to see an improvement on the socialized fee structure so that it is expanded and ensures that there is continued access to quality education for the poor and deserving. So that is my take on that. My understanding is, on the basis of the proposals, that those who are still poor, the poor and deserving, will still be provided access to quality education. And that the brunt of the fee increases for next year will be shouldered by those who can afford it anyway. No? If that is the concept, I'm fine with that. Now we have to look at how it's implemented, because usually that's where the problems rise. The state university concept is conceptually public access to affordable and quality education should not be compromised. So there.
Sir, I'm
good afternoon.
Lira Fernandez.
Yes, Lira, I know you.
Signed to cover Malacanang.
You used to be my text mate before.
Sir, the president has been saying in this election campaign to focus on the economy and not too much on politicking, and that candidates should leave the past behind and move on so there'll be unity. Do you honestly believe this will be achieved after the elections?
There are limits to uniting. There must be a basis for unity. And I'd like to think that in the end, while we would like the economy to flourish by all means, diba? And we'd like to move forward as a nation, we'd like to have less politicking and political maneuvering, why not? But there are limits to that in a sense that we still have a constitutional role to serve as a check and a balance. If in the desire to push the nation forward or desire to push the economy forward, there are violations of law. You know, it's so easy to, sabi nga nila, even the, and it's so easy to cloak, you know, the particular project or program under the guise of economic growth and prosperity. No, but when you look at the details of a particular program, you know, it turns out that merong mga hindi magandang nangyayari. No? Yung halimbawa na lang, yung fertilizer scam, you know, it's a wonderful program. You know, it's providing support services for our farmers. Diba? And who will challenge that? Diba? Who will oppose that? Diba? We'll all say, go ahead. We must provide sufficient support for our farmers so that their incomes can be augmented, so that their capabilities are enhanced. Eh, pagdating pala sa implementation, hindi pala tama.
No? So, Quezon City farmers.
I know, precisely. So, it's one thing to say, let's unite, come together, move the economy forward. Fine, we're all for that. You know, but we will have to ensure still that as we try and achieve that we do not violate the law and we do not use resources of government to precisely in an abusive manner, no? Exercising powers arbitrarily or in an abusive manner. You still need a check. I'd like to think you need a responsible check. You don't want also to impede growth and development. There has to be, you know, effective way of being able to serve both as a check, but at the same time as a partner for growth, depending on a case-to-case basis. I think we've done part of that in the last Congress. While we did oppose certain controversial and eventually illegal acts, as declared by the Supreme Court, we also supported revenue measures. We also supported the budget, passage of the budget of 2007, the automation measure, biofuels measure. So dapat nariyan pa rin yung pagiging independent, pagiging mapagbantay ng Senado.
We acknowledge that numbers are very crucial in both houses of Congress, and that probably the administration and the opposition are pushing for a 12-0 win in this election. If ever elected, do you see yourself aligning with either the majority or the minority?
Let's get elected first, and then then we'll see what happens then. Sabi nga nila, in politics, a week is a long time. But I will go where I think we will see, you know, a Senate led by a Senate president who will ensure that the Senate remains independent, will be uncompromising in its independence, that it must be effective and will continue to be a check and a balance on the executive and other branches of government.
Sir, lastly, you have to forgive me for asking this, but I just have to. Some are saying that the noodle commercial is very fitting because they say that in politics, you really just got lucky. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
You know, luck, they're just saying, diba? Luck is, what's the term? For those who work hard. No? Parang looks well upon those who work hard. And I wouldn't call it luck. I think, you know, I'd call it you're blessed in that sense. But being lucky alone is not enough. There must be hard work. There must be effort. I don't think my track record in the Senate this past 6 years in terms of how I have conducted myself and how I have performed is a matter of luck. If that were the case, I should have probably just kept quiet and waited for luck to make things happen. My track record shows that I have made painful, major decisions. I have taken stands on issues. I was not afraid to take controversial stands and oppose Malacañang on issues. And I don't see how taking a stand or making difficult decisions is about luck. Also, being blessed and being lucky or being blessed is yung sabi nga, may swerte rin, di ba? Pero hindi lang swerte. Kasi kung swerte lang, kasi bumibili ako ng loto, hindi naman ako tumatama. so medyo wala ako swerte ron.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Another reporter at Inquirer.net.
Hi, Thea. Diyos maray nga hapon.
Ay, Diyos maray na hapon din, sir.
Sa Indugabos.
Apa. Sir, honestly, do you aspire to become president someday, perhaps in 2010 or in the next elections?
President ng PTA ni Frankie. I don't know. It's been said na anything above the Senate is destiny. Tsaka I don't want to look too far, baka madapa ako. So I just do my work, which is really do my work, then bahala na where it takes me. Earlier, just being asked if this is all about luck, I just remembered, no? In the 12th Congress, hindi naman sa pagyayabang, pero I mean, the record is there. No? A committee report, I submitted the most number of committee reports of any senator. No? I mean, of all the senators in the 12th Congress, I submitted 1/3 of all committee reports that have been filed. Committee reports are a product of committee hearing on pending bills that have been referred to the different committees. Hindi nga lang umabot ng batas, but you really have to work at conducting all these public hearings before you're able to prepare the committee report and submit it and file it. So in that sense, you know, you work hard. You have to work hard. But the rest is really up to the God Almighty. Hindi mo na alam kung saan ka dadalin.
Pero kung saan ka dadalhin, nandun ka dahil yun ang destiny mo. Nararapat kang naroon. So, sa atin, we'll just work hard.
Pero sir, has this been tackled between you and your wife? I mean, on a lighter note, has she expressed na, oh, I don't want to be first lady, or is she okay with that?
Oh, nag-usap nga kami. Sabi ko sa kanya, sweetheart, ayoko maging first gentleman, ha? No. Hindi naman namin talagang napapag-usapan yun. We're really both just focused on our work. She in her TV show, her movies, and me in the Senate. And now as to higher office, we both know, I guess, na yan eh bagay na nasa Diyos na yan. Eh, no? Wala naman sa amin yan. Basta magtatrabaho lang kami. Eh, hindi ko nga, nung bata nga ako, hindi ko naman inisip maging ano eh, senador. Ang ambisyon ko, maging astronaut. That was my, ano, my... Kasi nung 6 years old ako, the first man on the moon, si Neil Armstrong. Di ba? So, tad-tad yung TV noon. So, talagang, kumbaga, sino bang mga hero ng mga bata ngayon? Basta noon, yung mga hero ng mga bata noon, si Neil Armstrong. So, I wanted to be an astronaut. I never imagined myself entering politics even. No? In fact, I only became serious about what's happening in the country when Ninoy was shot in 1983. Before that, I was a student leader in
UP. You were the first UP student leader.
But after Ninoy na yon. Before Ninoy, hindi pa nga ako active sa campus politics. Mm-hmm. I was a leader in the organization, but in high school, I was student council already. Not mm-hmm. president, but and then one of the editors of the paper. So, mm-hmm. in effect, parang I was active, no? Because my parents were both student leaders when they were in college, so they felt na it would be good experience for us to be exposed to this and become leaders ourselves. But I didn't imagine myself becoming a political leader. Let's put it that.
Another topic.
Let's put it that way.
Okay. Sir, do you believe that the display of government officials' names on public projects should be prohibited?
Yes, why not? No, it's really people's money. No, dapat brought to you by Juan de la Cruz, taxpayer. I have no problem with that.
So we don't expect to see projects from Senator?
Well, in my case, I don't really know. You know why? Because most of my projects are tied up with the local governments. But we don't make requirements of the local government. Sometimes they, out of their, you know, a gesture for their parang gratitude, they put my name. No? But for us, whether it's there or not, it's not really an issue for me. I happen to believe in the principle that mas malakas yung bulong sa sigaw. They know, you know, the local governments know, the people know who the workers are and eventually know who are deserving and who aren't. So there's no need to call attention to yourself in that sense.
Sir, are you in favor of passing laws for gay and lesbian rights or same-sex marriage or separate comfort rooms for bisexuals?
I will have to look at the details. No? I do respect and I have a high regard for the contributions. And I do have a lot of friends, no? Mm-hmm. who are either gay or lesbian. May mga kilala tayo, and we see that they have solid contributions in society. And therefore, let's see how we can provide them with, you know, with support. But I have to look at the details. No? Mm-hmm. No? I'm more of a liberal. That's why I'm a liberal party candidate.
Pero sir, how about yung same-sex marriage? What are your thoughts on that?
I'd like to go slow on that. You know, ako sa akin, everything is about how do you balance the interest of the entire community. So, if you're able to strike a healthy balance, then that would be the perfect arrangement. But if not, then you're going to see how far you can go. So, for me, it's really more, if you look at it in a academic and theoretical sense, it's really how much is allowable and how far can it happen. So I'd like to go slow on that. I'd like to look at, you know, certain privileges or certain benefits for people, you know, yung mga co-ownership arrangements. Yan, dapat. Palagay ko naman, no? May pwede yan. Pero yung marriage, teka, you know, medyo hindi pa ata ako, pag-aaralan ko pa, no? I haven't really taken a serious look at it.
Well, Senator, thank you very much for gracing the show and giving our listeners a chance to know your views and opinions on various issues.
Thank you, JV, and this is really a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to discuss in depth my own views about the country, where we're headed, how we should move forward. And it's very interesting that this technology is really reaching out to many Filipinos overseas, as well as, of course, locally. Talagang it's a wonderful experience for me as well. It's very new. I've done this before, but not as lengthily as this afternoon. And it's quite exciting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Election 2007 podcast of Inquirer.net. No part of this podcast may be reproduced without the written consent of Inquirer.net. For more information, comments, or suggestions, you can email us at election2007podcast@inquirer.net. That's ELEKSYON2007podcast@inquirer.net. Produced by Creative Voices Productions. All rights reserved, 2007.